evening. This is Big Al, and this is Big Al's Community Chat every other Wednesday evening. We're here for you and our listeners, education, information, local people, and just about everything that goes on here in Champaign. And tonight we have a very, very special guest. But before I tell you that, I want to tell you how thankful I am to this guest. It is 2 days before Christmas. He's on vacation and still decided to come in and share with you information. And I just want to tell you, this gentleman is a prominent gentleman here in Champaign. And I can tell you that he has a stressful job, but he handles it with calm demeanor. I've never seen him get angry, and I know him pretty well now after a number of years. We have the Chief of Police, Anthony Cobb, with us tonight. Chief, how are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, Al.
It's a pleasure to have you. Let me talk to you a little bit about the Chief here before we get started, and I'll tell you very simply that the Chief is a man of Champaign. Born, bred, and brought up here in the city, and he is, well, he spends most of his time at the police department, of course, but the road to this gentleman's ascension to the Chief of Police here is an interesting one, and Chief Cobb spent most of his time right here in Champaign, but his road to the top wasn't an easy one. On January 9th, 1970, the world met Anthony Cobb for the first time, and he was so cute. At an early age, he knew exactly what he wanted out of life, and I want to ask you that. And your mom raised five boys by herself, and I had two boys.
Okay.
And that was crazy.
I can believe it. Five boys.
How did they raise in age, Anthony?
We actually separated. Me and my older brother separated by 11 months. And then I got a brother that's 3 years younger than me, and I got twin brothers that are 6 years younger than me.
Oh, wow. So when it says you wanted to, you knew exactly at a young age, why did you know that, and was it really a police officer?
Something I always was interested in, thought I wanted to do. Never thought I would have the opportunity to do it. I was kind of frowned upon. I was growing up, I was a little kid, I always thought it was cool, fascinated by the uniform, by the car, by the work that they did. But like I said, never put much thought into it until I got a little bit older in life, and actually when I had the opportunity, jumped at it. So,
you were at a young age, you know, you could have been involved in the streets.
Yes.
Okay. You found another avenue. You found the Boys and Girls Club.
Yes.
I'd like, you know, because the Boys and Girls Club does just a wonderful job here in mm-hmm. Champaign. Give us a little background on the Boys and Girls Club and how it helped you.
Helped me a lot. I'll be honest with you, I didn't really want to go there when my mom initially enrolled us. Didn't know anyone there, being new, wanted to stay at home. She wasn't having it. She wanted us to get out of the house and give her a break. So she forced me and my older brother to go. My brother right up under me, we all went there over there together. And it took us a little bit to make friends, but as we started to hang out and meet the guys there, it became a great place to be. And then we didn't want to go home. The guys there did a good job with us. C.C. Evans, a lot of people knew him. He passed away not too long ago. But he was a father to a lot of guys in the community. But he was there from the day I walked in there to the day I walked out of there. He's done a lot for a lot of young people over the years.
How old were you when you first started in the Boys and Girls Club?
When I first got to the club, I probably was in about the fourth, fifth grade, so 9 or 10 years old when I first started going there. And pretty much went all the way through rest of grade school and most of middle school through the Boys and Girls Club. And then I started doing more Douglas Center when I got to the high school ages.
So you felt that it was almost like having a dad around the house.
It was. I mean, it's a good group of guys that I met at the club, got to hang out with, a lot of recreation we got to do. Not to mention the summertime, they had great programming. I mean, I got to see my first baseball game through the Boys and Girls Club. They took us all up to Cubs games. So I get to see a lot of baseball, which was fun.
And that carried over to high school?
Carried over to high school, yeah.
And give me a little bit, was Mr. Captain of the football team I see here, and I can tell why. You're a pretty big guy there, Anthony.
Well, I was a pretty big guy, pretty active guy. I enjoyed sports. Football's my primary sports. Played it probably since seventh grade on. I was pretty good at it. I started out as a fullback my freshman year of high school, And as I got bigger, I got to move up to the front line and became offensive defensive lineman. It was nice that I kept my speed. So Coach Embrough always used me as a pulling guard, which was really, really fun. I always got to travel to the other side of the line. And when you get there, guys, they're surprised to see you there. So I get to have a lot of fun when I collided with them.
Talking about, you know, football, how it's changed and mm-hmm. its concepts and it's how they look at, you know, there's a new movie coming out. I think it's tomorrow, called Concussion.
Mm-hmm.
You played football.
Yes.
My son played football. He was middle linebacker for Central High School. And in fact, my wife talked to him today and asked him if we never knew, but in any of his playing days, he played mm-hmm. 4 years varsity. Did he ever have a concussion or get hit in the head? And he said, no, it hasn't happened to him. But it's happening more. It seems to be happening more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is going to happen? My wife thinks, honestly, that in 20 years from now, there's not going to be any football because parents are not going to let their young children, their boys, play football because of the injury situation.
I can see that. And football is a very rough sport. There's a lot of collisions that happen with it. I've never was diagnosed with a concussion or anything like that throughout my playing careers. I was very fortunate. Never hurt when I played football, but I do have a lot of aches and pains that I'm living with today, I believe, from my years of playing football.
Playing football.
Yeah.
You were also the class president.
I was.
So both from the sports side and from the educational side, you were a pretty straight and narrow young man.
I stayed pretty active, yeah.
You said you had a juvenile record, though.
I had a juvenile incident when I was growing up. Me and my brother and a couple other friends did some criminal damage to our property. I'm not proud to say, but we're young. We're stupid. But had the opportunity. Mom put us out on a hot day and pretty much said, go have fun. Stay out of trouble. Of course, we went and found something, got into, found an empty home and vandalized a little bit, trying to turn it into a clubhouse. We figured we marked it up. Somebody let us have it. Didn't work out that way.
Well, you know, it obviously shows. You're the chief of police now.
Yes.
It shows that anyone can and should be able to straighten their lives out, make the right choices.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a little slip, which happens, or a bump in the road,
mm-hmm.
You can still reach some of the heights of professionalism.
It is. I mean, most times young people, we mess up. The law allows for that to some degree, as long as the mess up is not too great. Damage to property, this and that property can be replaced. We had to do some restitution, some community service hours, but short of it, it doesn't take you off your path if you aspire to do great things. So I tell young people, it's okay to live, but at the same token, you want to make sure you make good choices and learn from the mistakes that you do make.
That's great. Now here's an interesting, you were headed for ISU.
Yes.
But you ended up at?
I ended up at West Point, ultimately. I ended up going
West
to,
Point.
Yes.
That's an interesting story, I'm sure.
It was interesting. West Point was something I saw in a movie, thought it would be cool to do, but never thought it could be me. But I had an English teacher, Barbara McCormick, over at Centennial High School, who really challenged me and said, hey, if that's what you want to do, then you should go for it. Not knowing the process, but if you want to get in West Point, you need to start that process your junior year. I didn't start talking about West Point until halfway through the first semester of my senior year. And Barbara McCormick said, we should apply for it. And we started the applying process and saw we were late and didn't do things we needed to do. But she doesn't take no as an answer and started reaching through her resources. And she actually had a classmate she had went to college with who was a captain at West Point at the time in the Department of Physical Education. And she contacted this gentleman, and on his Christmas leave, he actually came to Champaign and met at my mom's house and sat down and talked me through what it takes to get into West Point, which just blew my mind. This guy would just give up his own time to come see me. In addition to that, he introduced me to prep school and talked me, hey, it may be a little bit late for the process to go to West Point, but you have a strong portfolio. Why don't you try for prep school? If you finish in prep school well, you can get into the academy. And so that's the option I took.
That's interesting. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting story. Let's take a little quick break. You're listening to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on the FM dial, and we're streaming live at weft.org. It's 8:10 p.m., and I'm just going to give you a quick update here, folks, because I know some of you have switched over from the Illini-Missouri game, and I have a final score for you. The final score of the Illinois-Missouri game is 68-63 Illinois. Yes, and if I tell you, the chief is decked out in his best Illini outfit. He looks great. I was a little nervous there for a while. We were up by 20 and then up by 5, and now we pulled it out. So 68-63 is the final for the Illinois-Missouri game. Let's move back to the chief again. You became a chief in 2012.
That is correct.
And you're the only second African-American to ever do it.
That is correct.
When did the first African-American chief, I'm not familiar with that.
It'd be Chief William Dye. Chief Dye was chief from 1979 to 1983, if I remember correctly.
That's interesting to have an African-American chief of police back in those days.
Yes, and actually, I was mistaken on dates, 1976 to 1983. And the reason why I remember 76 is they also he was a founding member for NOBLE, a National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executive. He was actually one of the founding organizers as a chief. So that was surprising, too.
Let's move on a little bit into your professional activities. You were pretty lucky enough to be able to work in all four of the divisions of the Champaign Police Department. And they are Patrol Division, Investigations, Support Services, and Administration. Give us a little background on each of those and what each of their roles are in the community.
Okay. In all honesty, I was worked in all four divisions at the Urbana Police Department. I came up through the ranks in Urbana. But patrol is basically the backbone of any police department. That's the operation public most see the most, and that's the guys out in the marked squad cars that provide service for the 911 calls that are received within our dispatch center. Came up through the ranks there, starting out as a patrol officer.
How many patrol officers are there in the city of Champaign?
In the city of Champaign, there are 125 patrol officers are authorized strength.
Okay.
Yeah. But like I said, I came up in Urbana, and I think Urbana's authorized strength is 55 patrol officers. But I started there as patrol officer, became the department's first community policing officer. I did that for about 2.5, 3 years. Before transitioning, becoming a school resource officer and working in investigations. As a patrol officer, you provide like some basic service. Community policing officer, I was responsible for developing the community policing philosophy for the city of Urbana. That's still been used somewhat today, which is I'm happy to say I'm part of. When I got to investigation, that was a great opportunity to learn a lot. Worked the big cases and the high profile cases, anything from homicides to criminal sexual assaults to crimes against young people. I got to work the whole gambit, which was refreshing as well.
So are you a detective in the investigations division? Are there only detectives?
Yes.
In that division?
Only detectives pretty much work in that division. There's in Urbana one civilian clerk that works in that division, but everyone's part of that division is a detective. You may have other duties as well, because I was a school resource officer that's assigned to that division. So I worked in the schools in the daytime, but I had to take my rotation on call like the rest of the guys. I worked the cases. If we had a homicide, I had to go and work in the field with the guys as well. I was part of the team, part of the unit.
I just want to go back for a moment when you talked about the Boys and Girls Club.
Mm-hmm.
We meet quite often at Central High School.
Yes.
And I want to get this in because I think it's very, very important. And we're looking for volunteers.
Yes.
Anybody out there who listens to this can volunteer 1 hour a week in the one-on-one Unit 4 Schools mentor program.
Yes.
And the chief and I are both mentors, mm-hmm. and we run into each other a lot at Central High School. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what brought you to mentoring and your mentor?
I love mentoring. I've been mentoring for a long time now. I actually started mentoring when I was in my 20s, and I can say I'm far from that now. The young man I have now over at Central High School, Tommy, great kid. Tommy and I first got together when he was in middle school, and we just made the transition over to high school. He's the second young man I'm actually going to follow through Unit 4 one-on-one mentoring program. But like I said, we get together once a week, and it's a great opportunity for us to just get caught up on life. From opportunity for me to decompress and talk with a young man about things going on in his life and how it relates to what's going on in my life. And he has pressures, I have pressure, and we can talk about the level of our pressure. But at the same token, it's a good opportunity for us to get out of the building, have lunch, break bread together, and just relax, talk to each other, and recognize there's people out there to support each other. So.
Now, if you're listening, this is only 1 hour a week, and it makes such an amazing difference in the lives of these young men and women.
Yes.
If there are women out there, and there are plenty of young ladies and in school who could use a mentor, and they really want them, there are lists, hundreds of students long, looking for mentors, both male and female. I've been mentoring since... well, Bottenfield, this young man, it's 9 years now, and he's graduating in May, and I'm excited he's on the football team.
Good.
He just came back from ranking seventh in the 20-team tournament in wrestling.
Wow, that's
good. He's doing extremely well. I'm very excited for him and very proud and feels so lucky to have just a young man like that back in my family.
No, that is great.
That's what happens. They become part of your family, and they're wonderful people. So if you have an hour a week, male or female, call Laurel Smith at that Mellon Building for the sign up as a mentor, please. It's a really wonderful opportunity. You'll be greatly appreciated. All right, let's move on with the chief here. I have a couple of questions for you, chief, and we're going to get into some interesting subjects right now. I want to start right away with one that's been in the news, and I really would like the background on this.
Okay.
I was sort of stunned when an officer that you had in your department had fired.
Okay.
Was forced back on you by an arbitrator, okay? You had reason, you had facts, you had evidence of brutality, you had evidence of him not doing the job properly, and it came to the point where which is pretty rare, firing an officer from your police department. So it had to be a very strong case. And then it went to this arbitrator. Please give me your background and what's taking place and what happened with this officer, please.
Okay. In this particular situation, we had an officer who was not performing or in a manner that was acceptable within our organization. We went through progressive discipline, training, retraining with the employee, trying to improve conduct. Unfortunately, we saw some negative things continue to happen. And it escalated to where we had three internal investigations going on at one time. Based on the totality of circumstances, we moved towards termination. Recognized we have a binding contract with our Fraternal Order of Police. In that contract, our employees can't strike. Our employees are obligated to come to work and take the wage that's given to them. If we can negotiate something, that's great. If not, arbitrator may rule on it. But there are certain things that employees have to do as well. And so they've honored their part of it. So also in this binding contract, it also states if we disagree on a termination, we go before arbitrator as well. And so we went before arbitrator and laid the facts out before the arbitrator. The decision has been made public as far as what the arbitrator ruled. But basically, he agreed that there were some problems here. He sided with us and said everything we brought forth was right, but he didn't agree with the punishment. He thought the punishment was excessive. So he reduced it from termination to a suspension. And that suspension, basically, as chief of police, the most I can suspend someone is for 30 days. So he put it at the high level. So basically, he gave the employee a second chance. Since the employee's been reinstated and returned to the department, he's been back with us about 8 months now. His performance has been acceptable. It's been what we want from all our employees. We're pleased with what he's doing and what he has been doing. All this came to light through some of the recent civil cases that has been the focus of attention within our community. I certainly understand anytime we're spending taxpayer dollars, people are going to have questions about it. And we had a couple civil cases that were settled here recently that brought all this information to light.
Well, here's my question for you.
Yes.
Why did it have to take firing for this offer to get back on the straight and narrow? Why did he have to be fired and then reinstated? Why couldn't there have been something prior to firing to get this officer back on track?
That's a challenging question, but that's probably a question better posed for the officer. I don't know why people do the things that they do, but one thing I learned early in life is respect the decisions adults make. I may not like them, I may not agree with them, but I have to respect them. And when I have an employee who's not performing at an acceptable level, we're going to hold them accountable. There's no way around that. There's no ands, ifs, or buts. When this employee came back into the organization, he came back very humble. He came back very contrite. He wanted to put it behind him. I wanted it behind us as well, but also made it very clear. If he comes in here and performs in a similar manner that he did when I fired him, I'll fire him again. So that was clear right up front. He understood it. He came in and he did his job, and he's done his job in an acceptable manner since his return.
So a quick observation. Let's say he didn't come up to your standards and was fired. Would it go back again to arbitration? What would happen is second, third, fourth? I mean, is this what the contract reads?
We'll recognize if we would have had another similar incident, it would have been a new incident would have had to occur. But if we had another finding or if we violated a rule, we'd implement the appropriate discipline based on what it is that we're investigating. But if I would have had another rule violation or incident of excessive use of force where we've already maxed him out at 30-day, the next step in the ring of progressive discipline is termination. So we would probably end up back in arbitration again.
Yeah. Now, there was a fairly large backlash when he's reinstated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's understandable. You did your job.
Mm-hmm.
The department did its job,
mm-hmm.
and then it was overturned.
Yes.
So obviously you can't be blamed for any of that, obviously. But there is calls now for a civilian review board.
Mm-hmm.
What are your feelings on a civilian review board? And what would a civilian review board actually do?
You know, there's a lot of different models and different civilian review boards across the country, so it depends on how we craft it, how we put it together. I'm not necessarily opposed to a civilian police review board. I think I've gone on record since Urbana created theirs when I was union president there and was part of that process. And I said, if done correctly, it can be something that can be supported. But it has to be something that people come together, try to put together to enhance community policing relationship within that community. If we try to put a board together that is going to be punitive and all they want to do is just hammer a police officer, it's probably going to be something that's going to be a streak of animosity between the department and the community. It has to enhance, and I would hope if we build one, build it off of a strength assessment and looking to make the department better. Building upon their successes, but at the same token, look for areas of weakness that we can strengthen. But how do we go about doing that? That's challenging. Right now, the conversation is building a citizen police review board with subpoena power. That brings a whole nother connotation with it just to begin with. So I'm not sure how things are going to lay out. That's something our elected officials and our community are going to have to work through together with the department and see if that's the direction we're going to go in.
Would the city council have to vote on putting one together?
City council would have a say in it, recognizes collective bargaining agreements. If you're going to require officers to be there, this and that, that definitely has an impact on work. That is something that can be a mandatory subject of bargaining where we have to sit down and work through things with them. So there's going to be a lot of people going to have some say in it, and hopefully cooler heads will prevail where people can look at what can we do to make our community better. And that should always be our focus. Our end focus is looking at what is going to enhance the overall community.
I need to take a quick break here and
okay.
make an announcement, Chief. Hang on, and we'll get right back to you. We at WEFT are working hard to improve our community radio station. Over the next few months, you will be noticing lots of positive changes in response to your feedback. We ask you to support WEFT Vision 2020. If you haven't yet responded to our annual winter appeal, please take a few minutes to make your donation. We are in financial trouble, and we need your help. Contributions can be made easily at www.weft.org/support. If you have made your donation, we thank you. Every penny goes directly into the operational costs for WEFT, and it's a tax deduction because we are a nonprofit. Visit www.weft.org/support today. Thank you very much. And you're listening to WEFT and WEFT.com. You're listening to 90.1 FM on your radio dial and streaming live at weft.org. Our guest tonight is the Chief of Police of the City of Champaign, Anthony Cobb. Anthony, tasers.
Yes.
You guys were given that opportunity. You know, Urbana had them. The county had them.
Mm-hmm.
And Champaign didn't.
Right.
The city of Champaign. But the city council allowed you to purchase how many?
25.
Mm-hmm. Have they all been distributed?
Not yet. We're in the process of starting to roll them out. There are a lot of training we had to put in place, but we just got in our first group through the training, so we're slowly starting to roll them out onto the road. We're our plan to hopefully have them all out by the end of January. It might be the early part of February before we have them all deployed.
Okay. You haven't obviously haven't had any conversation about use of them at this point.
No, we have not had a deployment of one as of yet. But like I said, we're just happy to be able to get people trained up and starting to get the tool out in, into the field.
What about cameras carried by the police officers, mm-hmm. Besides the cars, but on their body cameras?
Mm-hmm.
What is the policy of the city of Champaign?
Right now, we do not have body cameras. We've been exploring body cameras for a little more than a year. We actually have a request for a proposal out right now looking at body cameras, so we're talking with vendors now. But there's a good possibility we may see officers in the city of Champaign with body cameras in a not-too-distant future. There's some logistics we're still working through, but once we get all those details worked out, that may be a tool we'll be putting in the field as well.
Okay. Let's move on a little bit more. Obviously, there's been a lot of gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really scary is that it doesn't seem to happen just in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
There was an incident at the Steak and Shake up on North Prospect.
That is correct.
Where it was, I think it was 5:30 in the afternoon.
That is correct.
And it was crowded with people.
Yeah.
And this thing spilled into the parking lot and shots were fired.
Yes.
We found out later that it was somebody from Chicago who had come in. It was a stolen car from Chicago. What was the situation there, and how are we going to address community and the gun violence that we're starting to see so prevalently now?
Gun violence is definitely something that's a huge concern for all law enforcement officials. We've definitely seen a spike in shootings as well as shots fired. That's something we've been noticing a spike for the last couple of years. Even though crime overall was starting to go down, the shooting and shots fired were still going up. As far as this incident happened on North Prospect, 5:30 in the evening, large, heavily populated area, but it started from disagreement. A little bit of a kind of a domestic type situation where it started from. And we had an individual who didn't make a good choice and pulled a gun out and opened fire. We were very fortunate. No one was hurt. Considering we were shooting in the direction of large box stores, a lot of people in the parking lots, but to fire that many rounds that quickly and not have anyone hurt was amazing. Like I said, we did end up with a stolen vehicle out of it. Turns out the car that they were traveling in wrecked. We did get one person in custody, and we have a warrant for the other person. When I went on vacation, it had not been served. I know we were actively looking for that person. But I'm not kept up with did they actually get it served this week or not.
I know it's going to be difficult to – I mean, it's hard to control this kind of thing. There's no way to tell when something like this is going to take place.
Right.
Argument between two gangs or individuals, domestic problems like this take place. And yet it used to be that people went for – a slap or a punch or something, and now they just pull out an Uzi or they pull out a 38 and they just start shooting at each other. It doesn't make any sense. From a slap you can come back.
Yes.
I remember when I was a kid, if I had into a fight, we did it fists, who won, it was over and that was pretty much it.
Yes.
But I didn't go back into my locker and pull out a 38 and shoot the guy.
Yeah.
It's just becoming too much of a culture thing.
It is, and it's scary when you look at it. You don't see the kids balling their fists up and doing the fighting as you just described. We're going for the permanent solution to a temporary problem is the way I look at it, because when you shoot someone, there's potential someone can die from that. And there is no do-over. There is no second life in the video games as the kids play. And we try to point that out to young people. You can't go to the ultimate solution like that. But when you look at gun violence, it's definitely something that's on the rise. It's something we're concerned about. It's something that we're seeing as a problem across our country. The access to guns, the young people using that as their first solution, those are not good choices, and it's not a good choice for our community. One thing I always get concerned about is our community, are we getting immune to this type of violence where it's become normal? This shouldn't be normal for Champaign. We should all collectively say, no, we don't want this happening in our community. We want something different. And that's what we're pushing citizens to get involved. This is a problem that all citizens are going to have to take on from all parts of our community in order to resolve it. These things are becoming more prevalent. I think we're up to 111 shooting incidents, verifiable shooting incidents in Champaign-Urbana since February 13th of 2015.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's more, you know, it doesn't seem, wow.
Yeah. We're not talking hundreds. We're talking thousands of rounds that are flying through our community. Yes. That is a significant amount of firepower that's happening here. And we got individuals from several walks of life who are involved in all this. And some of it involves some gangs. Some of them involves some drugs. Some of them involves domestics. Some of them involve your mama jokes. It's the trivial thing, exactly, where people just open fire and start these different things. There's no one set indicator to say why a person is going to pick up a gun and why you're going to shoot. But it is a definite societal problem where we're seeing multiple people are making these poor choices. And that's a problem.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Okay. You ready?
Go for it.
Okay. San Bernardino, mm-hmm. Connecticut. There were 170 mass shootings. Mm-hmm. 190 of them. One was a terrorist. Maybe a second one was a terrorist. Mm-hmm. Most of them are not. Most of them are domestic.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be in favor of universal background checks and closing the loopholes at these gun shows?
Yes, I think anytime we can do more background checks, get a better idea who's getting access to weapons, that definitely can help out and close some of the loops. But recognize when we look at gun violence, and I'm only talking about from the local perspective, the individual, when we do finally catch up with them, the ones that have used guns, a lot of them were not lawfully allowed to have them to begin with. They didn't have the FOID card or had the concealed carry permits, and they were illegally possessing the guns to begin with. Some of them would have never gotten them if you'd done background checks on them because of their checkered past to begin with. So it's the access to the weapons. Yeah, we can close them up through better background checks, this and that, but the thing is that the individual I'm talking about are ones who are getting them illegally to begin with and should not have them. We need to work on keeping up with our weapons. If you're a gun owner, you need to know where your guns are at. You need to make sure they're locked up at all times and making sure people are not getting access to them. Those are the ones I'm concerned about, yeah.
All right. San Bernardino started a whole new conversation for mm-hmm. us, and I'm sure for all police first responders as well as our local sheriff and mm-hmm. And both chiefs of police in Urbana and Champaign. Have you taken any other actions? We have a mosque here. Mm-hmm. We have very peace-loving Muslims mm-hmm. who live within our community.
Yes.
They're going to school.
Yes.
You see them at the mall, mm-hmm. and you know them because the women wear scarves on their heads.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a big deal to me, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I guess because of the fear-mongering that's going on mm-hmm. in our national conversations, mm-hmm. We're seeing wanting more information about local mm-hmm. local possibilities. Have you guys worked with like FBI or mm-hmm. Secret Service? Do you get together in a group or do you work with communication? How does that work?
Yes, we work with our federal, state, and local partners. Recognize you mentioned we have a local mosque. We do have a local mosque. Wonderful people, American citizens. We have a lot of them who are truly, truly assets to this community. They don't want to see anyone hurt more than we would want to see anyone hurt. We work together. There's a joint terrorism task force that's sponsored by our local office, FBI. There are members within our departments who share information on a regular basis. But like I said, there's a local field office here with the FBI that we work with on the Safe Street Task Force, Champaign-Urbana, U of I police departments, as well as some area police departments, U.S. Marshal Service, Homeland Security. All these entities have a presence within the Champaign Police Department, working with our staff, working with our officers, dealing with issues, and a lot of things may start off on a local level and may grow to a much broader level. One thing I can think of, for example, we had a case early part of this year, or maybe last year, I don't remember the dates on it, where we dealt with a ring of gentlemen who were stealing tablets. You think, okay, stealing little big iPad tablets is not a big thing, but we're talking millions of dollars worth of tablets that were been stolen, and they had a base operation running out of the city of Champaign. And we worked a joint venture with Homeland Security that where started off a little investigation that we kicked off that grew into something more massive where they did synchronized search warrants and swooped down on several different entities at the same time. We work with our federal partners quite a bit.
Wow. Yeah. You just threw something at me. I hadn't realized we had a massive step right here in the city of Champaign that you needed to have federal authorities to work with. It's pretty interesting. The budget. Mm-hmm. Now, budget affects everybody.
Yes.
Since we don't have one in the state, how does it – I mean, has it affected you? Will it affect you? Will you have to cut back on some policing because – there's a lack of a budget, or is it just that the city budget, which again, it's ripples from,
yes,
from the state to the city, just like it is to the county, the ripples will hit you as well.
Yes.
Give me a little background on budgeting and what's going to happen there.
Yeah, we're still sorting through that. Recognize not having a state budget does have some impact. Our city council and our city manager, finance director all have done a wonderful job of trying to keep us informed of what's going on at the state level and how it's going to impact us locally. We put contingency plans in place. But as we try to navigate our way through this, I look directly at my city manager who's given us guidance and direction on it as she worked with our city council on it. The impact on the Champaign Police Department has been minimal up to this point in time. But like I said, it has potential. Depending on what state does, can have some significant impacts. We just don't know right now, and we won't know until they do come up with a budget. Once they get it and we can see what the impact is going to be, some of the money they're looking at could have some major effects on the local level. But right now we're moving forward business as usual, and that has worked out well for us to some degree. I mean, my city manager has been very supportive in making sure we have the resources that we need in order to provide the service to our citizens. And right now, gun violence is the big thing that we're worried about. As we're going into the holiday season, we want to make sure we keep everyone safe. We want to make sure people can have the opportunity to have a Merry Christmas and not have to worry about someone shooting in their house or shooting in front of their house as they're trying to enjoy their holiday.
Dorothy David is the city manager,
mm-hmm.
and it's a management executive type of government.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. I'm catching a little bit of a frog in my throat. Please excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
How do you work with Dorothy David as a manager? Do you sit down with her? What is your relationship between you and the manager?
Very well. I mean, I work with her quite a bit. I sit down with her on a regular basis, discuss issues within the police department, also within city government as a whole. We meet weekly as department heads with her, but then we have our regular scheduled one-on-one meetings where we sit down and talk with her. If there's issues that are going on, like some of the ones we've dealt with here in the last several weeks, we spent a lot of time together for the last couple of weeks. I think I pretty much lived in her office, it felt like, because we spent a lot of time talking through some of the responses we're making around these FOIA requests, as well as dealing with some of the lawsuit issues.
You also work in emergency management with the county.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was on that board with you, and we did that practice prior to the Gifford hurricane and tornado.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that we were all very, very prepared for that. You still involved in the emergency management and preparation for this great snowstorm that's not going to happen. You came in here, you were sweating. Just kidding. It's truly amazing. We're here in 2 days before Christmas, and it's going to break records again. Tell me a little bit about and for the community how emergency management works to protect them.
Yes, basically emergency management. All local officials, we work together in a unified command force, and as far as responding to incidents, we try to mobilize all leaders, whether be they our elected leaders as well as city leaders, as well as all the first responders, to deal with issues as they come up. And it's always nice to have all the disciplines present as we're running an emergency operation center. making sure we have the resource available and shift resources. The one thing I really like about this community is that we're very giving to each other. We recognize we are a community, even though there's different government entities present at the table, but we're willing to combine our resources and share our resources to help us get through any major incident. And that was very clear when we looked at what happened at Gifford. A lot of resources came from a lot of local communities in order to help that one community, and that's what we're supposed to do. And I think our community and our citizens were very proud to see us do that.
We have been speaking with the Chief of Police of the City of Champaign, Anthony Cobb. We are on WEFT 90.1 FM, and we stream live at weft.org. And I just want to thank the Chief for coming in. We just have about 20 minutes left in our show, and I have a couple more questions for the Chief. And one of the most important things I see is that youngsters don't like authority. We mm-hmm. know that. Mm-hmm. Teenagers are rebellious no matter what generation it is. Mm-hmm. My generation, your generation, it doesn't matter. But it's become more serious today. A youngster who might be looked at by a police officer and doesn't respond properly.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell the parents? How do you teach a young kid? What lessons can he learn from listening to the police and making sure that he doesn't get into any deeper trouble?
Well, big thing I always tell parents right off the bat, you want to know your child. Recognize as a parent, you have to make some tough decisions. And I think a lot of times where parents may get in trouble at is that we want to be our child's friend. And a lot of times it's good to have a good relationship with your child. You want the child to know that your love is unconditional for you, for them and towards them. But the thing is as a parent, sometimes we have to do some things that are in our best interest for our child, and they may not like it. We may not like it and have to hold them accountable for it, but we need to do it to help them to become that excellent person we want them to be. The best way I can describe it is I always tell parents, if you look at yourself, what made you uniquely you? What were some of the life experiences that you had to go through to make you who you are? Recognize you need to get some of that to your children as well. You need to get some of that tough love to them. You need to push some of those things back on them. I know as a parent, I'm a parent myself, I always want something better for my kids. And I don't want them to have to work as hard as I did. And I want them to be able to do more than I did. But I also recognize I got to give them some of what I got if I want them to have some of the wherewithal that I have and have some of the gumption to be able to stand firmly. So that's the reason I have to make some tough decisions, and all parents have to do that. But when it comes to a young person, I know kids challenge authority, but I wouldn't say they necessarily don't like it. It's all about I think kids like a level playing field and want the opportunity to have a chance. And my attitude is when I deal with high school age kids, I give them a chance. My attitude is, hey, you want to be grown? I'll tell you what, as chief of police, you're grown. In my eyesight, I see you as an adult. I bless you, you're grown now. Now, as adults, you got to make decisions here. And if you make poor decisions, recognize there's consequences that go with it. You make good decisions, there's things that you get called rewards. It's up to you to decide what decision you want to make, but when you make them, be prepared to live with the choices that you make. And that goes back to respecting the decision adults make.
You know, you hear stories by youngsters who say that they get stopped by the police,
mm-hmm.
and they're immediately tense, stressed. Mm-hmm. They may not make the right decision. They may run.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell them about interacting with police? What do you mm-hmm. do to keep that child from exacerbating a situation that might be just minor
right.
and turn into something major?
One thing I always tell young people, first of all, when you stop by the police, cooperate. And what I mean by cooperate is stop. If the officer actually stop. If there's something you don't want to do, you always have the right to invoke your right as a citizen. So young people always say, if police officers stop you, stop. Keep your hands where you can see them, because when you show them your hands and keep them where you can see them, there's no threats there. If the officer asks you, hey, what's your name? You can tell it to them. If you don't want to tell it to them, your parents told you not to, but I always say parents, you need to have a conversation with your young person about what your expectations are when you come in contact with police. But the thing I always tell young people is, if you don't want to do something with the officer, tell the officer I don't want to do it. Invoke your rights at that point in time. But recognize the officer may say, hey, you're required to provide this information to you. So if they want to know your name, some lawful things the officer's always going to ask for is biographical information, your name. Those things are generally going to get. If you don't want to give it, it may prolong the stop. But at the same token, you have a right to say, hey, I don't want to talk to you about it. if you want to ask for your parents to come there, I can't promise they're going to be able to accommodate that, but that is a request you can make. But the thing is, I always say, just invoke your rights as a citizen. But I always say, if you have nothing to hide, you haven't done anything wrong, be cooperative. But like I said, you don't have to consent to allow something to be searched. You don't have to allow people to put them hands on you if you don't want to. You have a right to say no. And anytime an officer asks you something, as a citizen, you can say no. But the thing you need to recognize is you may say no, and the officer may explain, well, I still have probable cause, and I'm going to go ahead and do this. For example, I say, you got a backpack there. Can I search your backpack? You say, no, I don't want you to search my backpack. Well, the officer said, hey, because of these circumstances, whatever they may be, I have a obligation, I have probable cause to search their backpack. I'm going to go ahead and do it. My response to the citizen is at that point in time, allow the officer to do it. You've already invoked your rights to say, no, I don't want you to do it. I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to resist. But you're telling me you have the authority to do so, officer. I'm not going to stop you. I'll take my backpack off. I'll lay it on the ground. I'll allow you the opportunity to do what you need to. But I just want to make sure you understand I'm not giving you my permission. And that's fine. But just want to be clear about what your rights are.
All right. So keep calm. Mm-hmm. Listen to the officer.
Mm-hmm.
And don't make any fast moves. Keep your hands out. Mm-hmm. And open so that he sees that there's no threat.
Right. And then just talk to him. Like I say, you got the right to invoke your rights if you want to. But at the same token, if you're not sure, you can ask the officer, hey, do I have to let you search my bag? Put it on him. He's the expert at the time. I always tell young people, you don't know situations that are fluid. If you don't want to do something, tell me. I don't want to do it. But do I have to let you? If you say I have to let you, then tell him, hey, I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to resist. I'm going to allow you to do what you said you have the right to do. I'm just telling you, I'm not giving you my permission to do it. And then get out the way.
It's common sense,
mm-hmm.
You know, but sometimes these kids, you know, common sense isn't the first thing to think about.
I would agree.
So we're just hoping that we can educate
mm-hmm.
our children to understand the authority of, mm-hmm. of the police and that they are there for the safety of them and the community.
But if they do get stopped by the police and they're not sure about the contact, they get some uncertainty, talk with a trusted adult. Go home and talk to your parents about it. If you don't feel comfortable, talk to your aunts, uncle, grandparents, your mentor, whomever. Call me. I'd be more than happy to discuss it with a young person. But the thing is that understand your rights. And if you don't know, ask questions. And the officer could be a good resource for that question. Throw it right at him. He's a professional there. Say, hey, I don't want to allow you to do this, but do I have to let you? He got to answer to me. He can say, yeah, you got to let me. If he's lying to you and do an unlawful search because he gave you bad information and lied to you, that could be problematic for him.
Got it. And in the same vein, how can families get involved in a community to help them safer? Or if right now
mm-hmm.
some of our listeners say, well, what can I do to help the situation?
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell them?
I would tell anyone in the community the way you can help the situation by getting engaged in the community. We do need to work through issues across our community. If you want to deal with gun violence, which is our number one issue, I encourage you to get engaged on the north side of town. We need to get engaged in those neighborhoods, helping individuals, helping families, helping those neighborhoods to not have to live like we're in a third world country to some degree based on the number of rounds that are flying through our community. If your gun violence is not what you want to get engaged in, then get engaged by mentoring. But as a community, we should always be looking to help each other out and should be doing it on a daily basis. I think I read a Facebook post when I was talking about it. They were pleased that one of our officers, because she was at Dunkin' Donuts and she was behind a police car, and he bought her breakfast for her. And so when she pulled up there, she was just like, to the anonymous officer, thank you. And there was a lot of people chiming in and say, hey, did you pay it forward as well? Did you continue to do it? Everyone should be paying for it, not just our police officer, but our entire community should be paying for it. But you should get in an area where you feel comfortable with and then stay there. Don't just do it for a day. Do it for the rest of your life.
Well, that's a nice way to discuss it. You've been in the position for more than 3 years now.
Yes.
What do you think has been the best or most important accomplishments that your department or yourself during that tenure?
I think my biggest accomplishment to date and the ones I'm most proud of is the work we've done to become more engaged in our community, the work we've done to try to show the human side of our officers. I like the work we've done on checks and balances as far as accountability on our employees. We're not perfect. We still have a lot of improvement in a lot of different areas, but I like the way we're moving. I like the way we're trying to empower our employees to be ambassadors of our community. My officers, when they're out there, we want them to know what's going on within the organization, and we want them to be engaged with our citizens and know they have the authority to go the extra mile to provide quality professional police service to them.
To the community.
Mm-hmm.
What don't I know about you, Anthony?
That's a good question. We've been all over the place talking about different things, but like I said, I'm a father of two. Love my time right now with my kids.
How old are your children?
My daughter's 19. My son is 16. But right now my daughter's home from school, so I'm off for a couple of weeks just spending time with the family. Just spending quality time doing things that we don't get a chance to do as much anymore because they both have busy lifestyles now that my son has got his driver's license.
That's great.
Yeah.
Give me a second. I have to reread this one little thing, and we're getting close to the end of our show tonight. And it's a bit warm in our studio right now, so we may have to turn on our air conditioning here shortly.
I mean, in December.
And you don't believe in global warming, do you, Anthony?
I do now.
You do
now. Get there.
Okay. We at WEFT are working hard to improve our community radio station. Over the next 3 months, you're going to be noticing a lot of changes, and that's in response to your feedback. We're going to ask your support to help us support our WEFT Vision 2020. If you haven't yet responded to our annual winter appeal, come on, take a few minutes, make a donation, as small or as large as possible. We really are financially strapped. We've lost a number of important grants to help with our expenses. And your contribution can also be made at www.weft.org/support. That's weft.org/support. If you've made your donation, we're going to thank you. Every penny goes directly into operational costs. We're all volunteers here. There are only a very, very few paid staff. This is a nonprofit community radio station, and all of your donations are tax deductible. So if you add a few extra bucks to that donation, it's going to be tax deductible. And guess what? The year is coming to an end very shortly, and you're going to need to get your taxes together. So this can't hurt of a little bit more of a deduction. Okay. We're back with the chief. We've got about 7 minutes to go. Chief, tell me a little bit more about what you feel the future is going to look like here in the city of Champaign and what you hope for in being able to get this gun violence subsided somehow.
Well, with the future holds, we're going to be working very closely with our community coalition as well as other local law enforcement partners to see if we can have a unified approach in dealing with the gun violence that we're seeing. We've had success over last several months with our gun task force. We put it together at the start of June, and it's been working together since that time. It's an approach we've been using here and there for the last couple years dealing with some of the gun violence, but we just didn't have a model that was sustainable. We're working to get a sustainable model. We're excited about some of the work that we may be doing at the community level, look and see what can we do as a community to get all citizens engaged and see what we can do to stand united and let the individuals know that who are choosing to use gun violence, that this is not acceptable in our community. If we can persuade them to drop the guns and go a different direction, we want to embrace them and help them do so. But if they choose not to, we definitely want to hold them accountable and remove them from our community, recognizing they may eventually come back. But hopefully they'll come back with a new attitude and ready to abide by the rules that we set as our community and understand there's certain things we will not tolerate, and gun violence is one of them.
Well, I want to thank Chief Cobb. He's on his vacation, and I've interrupted that, so we're going to send him back to his family, and I'm certainly going to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas
Thank
and
you.
A Happy New Year, a safe one for you and all of your officers. You gentlemen do a upstanding job here in the city of Champaign.
Thank you.
I've had very close relationships with all three of the departments, including the University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
We are very lucky to have as many law enforcement officers here
Yes.
As we do.
Yes.
Besides that, we have state police, we
mm-hmm.
have the University of Illinois, City of Champaign, City of Urbana, and the Sheriff's Department,
Yes.
Which doesn't happen in most communities.
Yes, to have five police agencies who serve this one community is huge. Because when I think about Champaign-Urbana, we are one community.
It's do you while I have you just here for another mm-hmm. minute, how do you go about? Let's say there's a crime committed in Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
When a 911 call comes in, it doesn't go to everyone. It'll go to the city of Champaign, I'm assuming. But do your departments pick up 911 calls from Champaign, or the sheriff's department comes in to help you? Mm-hmm. How does that that combination and mm-hmm. cooperation work?
Pretty much when anyone dials 911, that call goes into Metcat. Metcat is right. our countywide dispatching system. So once they get the information, they'll put it in the computer and they'll send it to the appropriate jurisdiction based on where the crime occurred. If it's an in-progress crime, a lot of times they do what we call a simulcast. As they're putting it out, they'll dispatch the agency that's supposed to go, but they'll notify other agencies. So if something happened on U of I campus, instead it happened at one of the university building, university police can be the primary to go. But when Metcat dispatched, Urbana and Champaign both will hear it. Same thing if we had a street robbery that happened on campus, where it happens on a city street in Champaign. Champaign's responding to it, but U of I will be notified as well so they can hear it. And so our guys are listening to each other's frequencies. So if something was to happen, say, in Dobbins Down, the north part of Dobbins Down is out in the sheriff's office.
Right.
So we may have Champaign officers who may go out there with the deputies or vice versa. They may come into the city and help us with something. But we're always looking to help each other out. And if an officer's close to it, regardless of jurisdiction, if it's a crime in progress, they're coming. If it's a service call or a report call, then you're probably just going to get your jurisdiction. But if it's something that's happening where someone needs a police officer now, whoever's available, if they hear it, they're coming.
It really is. We're very lucky here in Champaign to have that type of first responders. Thank you, Anthony. I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
I want to thank you for coming in for this hour, and maybe down the road when things hopefully improve or
settle
whatever
down,
the situation is, we'll get you back on the radio again, and we'll talk a little bit about what's been taking place.
Appreciate it.
All
thanks
right?
a lot.
I want to thank Anthony Cobb, the Chief of Police of the City of Champaign. And I wish him a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas
Thank
to you,
you
as well.
Take care, Anthony.
Take care now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you just heard from the Chief of Police of the City of Champaign, Anthony Cobb. He was gracious enough to come in on his vacation and spend some time with us this evening. I have a couple of announcements to make before we go off the air. And first, of course, this is Christmas time, and I want to wish each and every one of my listeners who celebrate Christmas a Merry Christmas. And, of course, since I will not be here again until next year, I want to wish each and every one of you a great, happy, and safe New Year's and New Year's Eve. And please drink responsibly. Please do not drive if you have been drinking. Find someone. Have a designated driver. Please be safe. And don't get pulled over by Anthony Cobb's police officers and get arrested for DUI. You really don't want that to happen. So please come on and make sure that you have a great time. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself with your family, but stay safe. North, south, east, and west, Thursdays, 2 to 4. Since March 2003, your folksy and enthusiastic host, John Watson, has been traveling north, south, east, and west, circumnavigating the earthly orb in belief that melding of musical motifs can contribute in a pleasant and positive way to a greater global harmony. National Native News airs from 2 to 2:05 weekdays with news from the Native American community. Dush Welly Radio News airs from 3:30 to 3:05 with world headline news as well. So I want to say the one more thing, the Weekend Heartbeat. The Weekend Heartbeat collectively airs on Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. Enjoy four different programs throughout the month, starting on the first Saturday of the month. Peace Talks Radio, hosted by Joy George, addresses personal conflict we face every day and ways we may effectively deal with these challenges. The New Lamp with Marilyn Rickey brings an informative light to the Baha'i faith and its philosophy. Speaking of democracy with Doug Olive takes a look at political theory and its sociology. All right, we're coming to the end of our show. I want to wish each and every one of you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. See you next year.